Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 17th of September. Last week, Blacksmith Institute, which is an independent environmental organization, in partnership with Green Cross Switzerland, issued their top 10 list of the world's most polluted places. Blacksmith has been working in locations throughout the developing world where human health is most affected by pollution. And their programs involve identifying polluted places in the developing world and assessing the health risks at those locations, and then designing and implementing a remediation strategy that's tailored to the specifics of the site. We're going to be looking at the top 10 places in Azerbaijan, China, several of them, India, a couple of them, Peru, Russia, the Ukraine, and Zambia. And talking about this really interesting organization and how they get money together, first of all, how they identify these polluted places, what's causing the pollution, and then the cleanup efforts that are underway. Meredith Block is with us. Meredith is Programs Associate and Africa Coordinator for Blacksmith Institute. Solving pollution problems in the developing world is their mission. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Hello, Meredith. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you. Good morning.
Tell me a little bit more about Blacksmith, who you are, and you're not real old an organization, are you? How did you get started? And tell me about the mission of the organization.
We are a young organization, only founded in 1999, with the mission basically of cleaning up industrial pollution in the developing world. I've been working with Blacksmith for about 2.5 years. But our founder and director, Richard Fuller, this has been his passion from the beginning. And basically, he got started by trying to look at an area of environmental and social justice issues that were underrepresented in the development community.
Mm-hmm.
And he realized quickly that the concept of cleaning up these toxic sites wasn't really on the global agenda.
And it is remarkable, it's terribly sad, how many people are at risk and how many people die because of these industrial wastes, legacy pollution from old industry. It affects literally billions of people on this planet, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. It does. And, you know, in the communities where the pollution doesn't necessarily kill people directly, it impacts development in ways where people are chronically ill for the duration of their lives.
Mm-hmm. You are doing work specifically in Africa, is that right?
Yes, I administrate all of our programs globally,
mm-hmm.
so I have my hand in a little bit of every project that we do, but specifically my focus has been on trying to design and implement our work in sub-Saharan Africa.
How do you identify the most polluted places on Earth each year? What's the process you use to go about determining that?
Well, since 1999, I'm getting a little bit of an echo.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know why. I'll just turn my mic down when you talk, then you shouldn't get that, I hope. Okay.
Great, that's much better. Thank you. We have a database of about 400 sites that we have compiled since 1999. And basically, how we get these nominations comes from every source imaginable, from colleagues in the industry, from sites that we discover ourselves. Sometimes we only get half of a paragraph on a handwritten letter in broken English, and that sort of tips us off.
Oh my.
Really, nominations can come from anywhere, and it's up to the staff and also the expertise of our technical advisory board to determine where we can actually do project work.
And then you actually step in to those areas to do work, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's interesting because we don't really write reports. Actually, this World's Worst Polluted Places report, it's only in its second year, and it's really the first publication that we've ever attempted to issue because our work is really more focused on projects, on, you know, shovel in the ground remediation efforts. But we were happy to do the report to put industrial pollution on the global agenda.
And you've been tell me some of your success stories, places you've identified as being heavily polluted where you've stepped in and really made a difference.
Sure. Well, there are a number, and anybody can check out on our website. We actually have a list of success stories, but everything from communities in Russia that we've installed water filters in to radioactive dirt that we've removed. There are so many to speak of. Removing hexavalent chromium from groundwater in India, remediating hazardous waste with actually using vermiculture to do that. A lot of these problems, you have to understand, are really easy to fix and sometimes not that expensive, because really what we're trying to do is focus on removing the pollutant from the pathway to the population. So sometimes it's as easy as capping some radioactive dirt or just installing water filters.
If it is so easy to fix, Meredith, why hasn't it been fixed? Why do you have to step in? Why doesn't the local community or the government of the country step in and fix it?
That's a good question. I mean, I think that because most of these places are located in the developing world, governments have so much that they're concerned with funding and focusing on right now, mm-hmm. specifically clean water, just building basic infrastructure. And I think that the incidences of industrial pollution are just not necessarily on the global agenda. I can't really explain why. It might have something to do with the fact that green issues such as conservation and trying to curb global warming, those are much more popular, because these issues are nasty and they're really, really sad. Plus the development community, there are so many other issues that have taken precedent in recent years, from AIDS to malaria, that I think for a government that doesn't have a lot of money to begin with to try and speak to them about, curbing pollution from activities that are actually helping their economy, it gets a little sticky.
Let's look at the top 10 of the year 2006. Where were they located?
Well, all across the planet. We had a location in Azerbaijan, one in sub-Saharan Africa in Zambia, a location in Peru, two in Russia, two in China, two in India, and one in the Ukraine.
And now will you immediately set to work on fixing those problems?
Well, basically, the sites listed in this report, we actually have project work in, hold on, let me see here, 1, 2, 3 of the locations. The sites that are listed are not necessarily sites we work in. I mean, they're all sites that we would like to work in, but as our organization is very small and we don't have too much funding, our strength really lies in our ability to source funding from the development community directly to these local governments to fix problems. These sites in particular, I guess it would depend on the site, but some of them already do have a lot of attention, like, for example, Chernobyl or La Oroya, Peru, where there's already a lot of NGO action on the ground. We prefer to work in places where we go in with a coalition of everybody from the local NGO and community groups to the local government to the industry to work on fixing the problem. And so in these sites, these are all sites we would like to work in, and hopefully this report will make things a little easier for us.
I was interested. You mentioned Chernobyl. I was interested in one of these sites, number three on your list, Eastern Europe and Central Asia, country of Russia, radioactive sludge removal. The highly radioactively contaminated riverbanks and sediments of the village swimming hole have now been cleaned up. A spill from the Mayak, I think that's how you pronounce it, plutonium facility in the late 60s released four times the amount of radioactivity into this river as was released by the Chernobyl accident. That's a huge amount.
It was a massive, massive leak. This is in Mayak, and the swimming hole you're talking about is in a village called Muslyumova. And that was a terrible situation, but what ended up happening was they relocated almost every village around this river except for this one. I'm not exactly sure the reasoning, but you know, the radioactive readings were absolutely sky high when our technicians first showed up, and basically by removing the soil and putting a cement cap over it, we were able to reduce the amount of radiation to background levels.
We're going to welcome phone calls. We're going to get Meredith on a better line so she's not getting feedback. So we'll call her back and welcome phone calls. She is the program's associate and Africa coordinator for Blacksmith Institute. And our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Blacksmith identifies highly polluted locations throughout the world and then works in those areas to mitigate health risks from pollution. They look at the type of pollution, the toxins involved, the extent of the contamination, whether it is active or legacy, and have a long-term aim of banishing this program, this problem, actually, from all over the world. So they're doing small-scale cleanups, large-scale cleanups, and working on complex sites and also active sites where the pollution is ongoing. 800-486-8655. Meredith is the Africa coordinator as well for Blacksmith Institute. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. They have just released their list last week of the worst polluted places for the year 2007. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we go to phone calls for Meredith. She is the program's associate and Africa coordinator for Blacksmith Institute. Our number is 800-486-8655. And we start our calls with Vusa from Wausau. Hi, Vusa.
Hi. I'm original from an Azerbaijan, from former Republic of Azerbaijan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to hear your guests do all these activities in cleaning the environment. But I have a suggestion and kind of a question. The question is that how much of educating the community do they do? Because sometimes these people that live in this neighborhood are not even aware what are these hazards mm-hmm. around them, mm-hmm. affect them. What is it doing to their health? I mean, they kind of take it for granted. I mean, this explosion happened and we just live with it. How much of educating? And the comment is that this organization being small, I mean, that's great that they're trying to help out, but you have to keep in mind this. Most of this pollution that is occurring in the beaches or, let's say, in the areas that are done by foreign companies who do jobs there. For example, Caspian Ltd. is one of the biggest caviar canning companies in Azerbaijan, okay? And they do lots of, you know, canning of fish and sturgeon and caviar. And what ends up being, if they just catch a fish and dead or they don't like, they just dump it in the sea, which ends up stinking and, you know, you can imagine what happens to the water. And another thing is oil production, you know, like I know there's a big emphasis now in this demanding, trying to get these foreign companies to clean their mess, but they just go ahead and dig the, you know, oil and this extra, the garbage that from this oil and other products is just left there, basically because there is no, you know, authority to go after them. They just don't care. They don't go and spend millions of extra dollars that they would have do in, you know, taxes in Alaska. and they don't do this kind of stuff. So how much of target of companies itself do they do? You know what I mean? And thank you so much. I'll take my comments off the air.
Thank you, Vusa, for your call.
Well, let me start at the beginning by just mentioning that every community the Blacksmith Institute works with, it's really a community-driven effort. So we can't really do the work that we do without a coalition of every stakeholder. And the most prominent stakeholders are the people living in the community. And so the amount of education that goes on in the community is quite extensive because we help the people help themselves. You know, these problems, they can't really be fixed by some outside influence coming in and just ordering people around. It's really a coalition effort with everybody from community groups, teachers, healthcare workers, and when we can, we try and work cooperatively with industries and with local government. In terms of the other issues you mentioned in Azerbaijan, I do want to say that we accept nominations from anyone, anywhere at any time. You can either send a nomination by mail to our office, or you can email us at nominations@blacksmithinstitute.org, and then we can do more research to follow up on these sites. And in terms of these big companies coming in and polluting, you know, we really will look at any site anywhere, and mostly what we've found is that the worst pollution is actually coming from small independent facilities or state-run facilities, and it's not necessarily the large multinational corporations that are doing the polluting. If you notice on this list of the top 10, I'm pretty sure that we really only have maybe one or two companies that are actually named in La Arroyo, Peru, Doe Run Corporation, and then Norilsk Nickel in Norilsk. And also, one other thing I wanted to mention is that Blacksmith Institute focuses on toxics, on cleaning up toxic waste that has a significant human health impact, especially in terms of carcinogens and neurotoxins. So it's for that reason that we don't actually fund projects related to sewage or solid waste. So we're drawn to projects where there's a significant amount of heavy metals getting into the environment or other toxic chemicals.
Do you have to get state permission, country permission, to go in and do your work? And if so, have you had any problems getting such permission?
Well, to be honest, we don't usually proceed without, like I said, this coalition that we develop in every community we work with. And a lot of that comes from the local government. Most times you'll find a champion that works either in the local division of the Ministry of Environment or the Ministry of Industry that is really concerned with the problem, and we bring them in right from the beginning. Because basically what we say to them is, we want to help you clean up this problem. We don't want to point fingers. We don't want to create any negative impacts beyond reasonability for the industry here. We just want to come in and give you the resources, technical and financial, to deal with this problem.
Mm-hmm. And where do you get all the technical resources, Meredith?
Well, we have a technical advisory board, which is a pro bono group of the leading professionals in environmental engineering, environmental health sciences, doctors, just an amazing, amazing group of professionals who volunteer their time to us whenever they can. It's really generous. These are people who have full-time jobs, being engineers or professors, doctors, and every month they come together on a big conference call, and we review sites that are nominated, and they help us determine which one likely has impact, which one we need to go visit, which one looks like we can actually do some good there, and then they recommend steps that we can take to deal with the pollutant. And more often than not, we will send members of the Technical Advisory Board out to a project site, and they donate their time and their expertise, and will design the remediation work.
It is interesting, as the president of your organization has said, that that we forget that in many parts of the world, ordinary pollution is still something that destroys a lot of lives. Mm-hmm. And this would be, and it happens in the United States, I'm sure, too, but what you're working on has destroyed a lot of lives and gone somewhat under the radar.
Right. Well, if you look at this country and the history of pollution in this country, in the 70s is really when people began realizing how bad industrial pollution can get and how it really can impact people. And that's where you had the Superfund and different funds were created to deal with these types of problems. And I doubt that you'll find, say, for example, a community of 10,000 people all suffering from severe lead poisoning in the United States. You simply won't find these problems anymore because mm-hmm. we not only have the awareness and the financial ability to deal with them, but we also have the technical capacity. If you look at the environmental controls that we have on our facilities today, I mean, granted, they still, most of them have problems, especially in terms of CO2 emissions, but you're not going to find the same kind of toxic pollution going into the environment in such great quantities as you find in the developing world.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the work you're doing in Africa. Were there places in Africa on the top 10 list this year? And then the second part of the question is, tell me about the success stories in Africa.
Sure. Well, we had one site in Africa this year, a town called Kabwe in Zambia, which is facing extensive lead pollution from an old zinc and lead mine, which basically operated without any controls for about a century.
Oh, my.
And when the last blood tests that were taken in the area, children's blood lead level concentrations were 5 to 10 times U.S. EPA permissible levels.
Mm.
I mean, you're averaging 50 to 100 micrograms per deciliter, when really the maximum World Health Organization limit is 10 micrograms per deciliter. And, if you were to walk into an emergency room or a doctor's office in America and you had a reading above 10 micrograms per deciliter, it would be considered an emergency, and you would get on a very strict chelating agent right away. But these children, the average is 50 to 100, which basically means that for every 10 you go above 10 micrograms per deciliter, that's 10 IQ points that you're missing.
Oh, my.
So what's interesting about Kabwe, though, is that it's actually something of a success story, too, because before I started working for Blacksmith, our director was able to work with the World Bank's Zambia Copper Belt Environment Project to get funding into the community to completely clean up the city. And so since that time, since we've been able to leverage this incredible amount of funding to the community, Blacksmith has remained a presence on the ground, acting as oversight to make sure that the World Bank project is doing exactly what it set out to do. And so far they've been able, at least in the meantime, while the remediation efforts are just beginning, to implement a educational program with just basic measures that people can take to reduce the amount of lead dust that's entering their homes, everything from washing your hands before you eat to having a different set of clothes that you wear outside than you do in your home.
Mm-hmm.
Basic things like that, just getting children to stop eating dirt.
Mm-hmm. And how do you let people know about this? How do you do these educational programs?
Everything from workshops to pamphlets to different educational cartoons that get posted around, radio programs.
Mm-hmm.
There are many ways. School programs, we work closely with teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And also other healthcare agencies that are in the area.
But obviously the healthcare agencies in the area have not been alerted to the problems caused by pollution, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they can tell, because you can see very clearly extensive lead poisoning.
Mm.
Even something as simple as the occasionally with people that are experiencing incredible amounts of lead poisoning, their eyes will go sort of cross-eyed.
Oh, my.
And also the children are having a hard time in school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their ability to learn, absorb information, even to concentrate is so greatly diminished.
We welcome phone calls and feel free to join our conversation. Our guest is Meredith Block, Programs Associate and Africa Coordinator for the Blacksmith Institute. Last week, they listed the top 10 in the world's most polluted places. It's in seven countries and affects many, many, many people. The top 10 appears in a report and highlighting places where pollution most severely impacts human health, especially the health of children. These locations in 2007 are in Azerbaijan, a couple locations in China, two in India, one in Peru, two in Russia, one in Ukraine, and one in Zambia. What they do is then they have another list of the Dirty 30, a more comprehensive group of polluted places around the world. Mining, Cold War legacy, pollution, and unregulated industrial production are the major culprits here identified by the Blacksmith Institute report. They also, if you go to their website, they have a really interesting website because they work with people in these highly polluted areas to clean them up for small-scale cleanups and for large-scale cleanups and for active sites and complex sites. And they have a number of success stories to report, which are always good to hear. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee line to call is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050, and we have lines open for you right now. If you would like to join us, we would like very much to hear from you. You can also go, if you'd like to get to the website to look at it as we're talking and to look at the list and more information about these polluted places, the Blacksmith Institute is very simply blacksmithinstitute.org. It's all together, blacksmithinstitute.org, and you'll get information about the pollution problems in the developing world, the countries they have identified, and their efforts to really make a difference and clean up these sites. So we welcome your phone calls for Meredith and we'll take more of them right away, starting with Megan from Minnesota. Hi, Megan.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. How are you, Megan?
Oh, I'm well.
Good.
Yeah, I grew up in a little town called Leadville, Colorado, mostly, which is was a mining town, and it's at the headwaters of the Arkansas River, and it was one of the early towns. The entire town is actually a Superfund site now.
Oh.
Heavy metal poisoning, lead poisoning, arsenic, copper, you name it, kids with low birth weight, kids with low IQs, huge numbers of teenage pregnancies because the kids drop out of high school.
Mm.
And, I mean, when it was a Superfund site, when it was actually listed, it was actually years before anybody did anything about it. It was listed as a Superfund site in 78. The mine wasn't closed down until 86. And then it wasn't until about 2002 that the real cleanup started. So it's, you know, and now I live in Minnesota, of course, I got out, but it's, you know, even in the U.S., there are sites like these where, you know, just the industrial chemicals are just insane. So I can listen to the speaker off the air.
Thanks very much for the call, Meredith.
Yeah, that's really terrible. What can I say about domestic issues? Well, let me start by saying that one of the reasons that we work in the developing world is because the problems are actually much less expensive to deal with. Unfortunately, you know, we fundraise at our organization about $1 million a year, so we're quite limited in the projects we can choose to do. But that being said, one thing that differs our program from the Superfund is that we aren't necessarily concerned with how the pollution got there or who's responsible for it. Our main goal is to get in there and fix the problem without creating a lot of fuss, without getting people unnecessarily alarmed, and without necessarily incriminating industry, because lots of times when the people who own these factories are aware, you know, when we bring them health data and we say, look at how you're poisoning these people, occasionally they freak out and are instrumental in trying to fix the problem because they can't even believe it. I'm not really an expert on Superfund sites. I don't know too much about this site in particular. But I do know that there is a significantly more attention paid to sites domestically and more funding available for domestic sites than to sites in the, than for sites in the developing world. Unfortunately, it's sad that things weren't able to be done sooner. But basically, Blacksmith Institute will work in as many places as we can, and the more money we get, the more money we can spend, essentially. So hopefully one day we'll be able to work domestically and fix up the problems that we still have in this country.
And Megan, thanks very much for your phone call. We'll welcome more calls in a moment, and if you would like to join our conversation, you can't make a phone call, but you got a computer and you want to send us an email, you could do that as well. That's just easy. talk@wpr.org. T-A-L-K @wpr.org. Our guest this hour is Meredith Block, Programs Associate and Africa Coordinator for the Blacksmith Institute. And we are talking about the top 10 of worst polluted places in the world for the year 2007, and looking at the number of children who are sick and dying in these polluted places, and the fact that it's not rocket science to fix them. Our guest is telling us about what those places are and their success stories around the world in cleaning up polluted places. 800-486-8655. A couple lines are open for you. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest is from the Blacksmith Institute, Meredith Block, Programs Associate and Africa Coordinator for the organization. We're looking at the world's most polluted places for this year and how Blacksmith is stepping in to clean those up. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. And we go next to Matthew from Madison. Hi, Matthew. Hi.
My question, and it's always been something in the back of my mind, and I think it's a problem worldwide, is what do we do with a lot of the waste that's just generated from the normal products that we buy, everything that's packaged in? I mean, a lot of those waste products that are generated by industry are not thought of once they're produced, but we can't burn plastics because they create toxins. And do you guys look at working with governments to maybe set up rules that would require corporations to take back the packaging that they use to put our food and other goods that we buy?
Thanks for the question. That's a little bit beyond the scope of what our activities are. Mostly, we are concerned with the communities that actually those products are produced in, because, like I said, our focus is on toxics that have a human health pact, specifically in regards to children's health and children's development. Of course, solid waste is a issue that we are concerned with, but just it's not necessarily a priority for us. I think we're just going to try and fix the problems that are severely affecting human health in these communities. And then once we've taken care of all of that, solid waste is probably our next objective.
And thanks very much for the call. As you look at the differences between the 2006 list and the 2007 list, are there any that strike you, Meredith?
Well, let me think about that for a second. Well, we do, there are some differences in the list. between this year and last year, there was a little bit of a more refined process in selecting the sites for this year, with an increased focus on children's health and also population size. And basically, something of note, actually, is that we had a site on our list in 2006 in Haina in the Dominican Republic, which is a site that is actually a community that was built up around an old lead battery recycler where all the children in the community just have the most severe lead poisoning. Their blood lead levels are incredibly high. The levels of retardation throughout the community are really apparent. And what happened was that after last year's report, it really was able to galvanize the local government into increasing our partnership and being able to work with us more effectively to get something done. And we've designed a remediation plan and are just about to get started moving some dirt around, sealing off more of the hazardous parts. And so as a result of the work that's been done, we took that site off of last year's list.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about why China is on the list and the success stories that you may have had in China, Meredith.
In China. Well, the two sites actually that are on the list, and this is maybe just a note for the list in general, is that we chose certain sites because they represented a problem that is incredibly widespread. There's been a lot of attention paid recently to sites in China, to so many cities and places in China that are experiencing all sorts of industrial pollution. And the two sites we chose could possibly be counted as the worst, but they're certainly not alone. And so one of the reasons that we chose these sites was to sort of draw the attention to them that this is actually a problem that's really widespread.
Mm-hmm.
And China is actually an area where we're going to be increasing our work in the next 2 years. We haven't focused on China up till now just because before we work in a country, we like to make sure that we have the best local representation and the best local partners as possible. And so we're just now really starting to get in there and deal with industrial pollution. We had a couple of projects in the earlier part of the decade in China doing a little advocacy in and around Beijing, also in Yunnan province, just some solid waste management issues before we really focused on wanting to work with toxics. But China is definitely an area that we look forward to working more extensively in.
And do you imagine that it will be possible for you to do that? I'm thinking about how probably reluctant is the word the Chinese government has been in letting us inspect toy factories and inspect plants for products that have come here that have been harmful to our health.
Right. Well, I think the key to all of that is discretion. Like I said before, Blacksmith Institute's focus is on getting the project work done.
Mm-hmm.
So in that, where we don't necessarily like to point fingers, we also prefer to work under the radar when it's possible so as not to embarrass the local government. And that also adds to the favor of the project because it makes it easier for us to do the work we need to do. So I would say just as we continue to be as discreet as possible, we're looking forward to working with our Chinese partners in an increased partnership with the government to deal with these problems.
Mm-hmm. And do you find that people are willing to step up to the plate no matter where you are, that there are local organizations in place, that there's a great willingness on the part of the local population to deal with these issues?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, these are their families.
Right.
These are their communities. So the local support is absolutely essential to the work we do and is always there.
Mm-hmm. And tell me how the organization has grown. It is a new organization. Are you finding that you're getting more and more support from individuals who are concerned about this around the world, from organizations who would like to help you, Meredith?
Right. Well, it's interesting because whereas our database of sites has grown exponentially, and I think we're pretty much aware of probably almost every pollution hotspot on the planet, funding for this kind of work is actually surprisingly scarce. We have applied to almost every foundation you can think of in the United States for funding, but what's popular to fund right now is mostly work with organizations that are focused on climate change, green organizations that do conservation work or preservation work. You know, most environmental foundations that we apply for say, oh, no, 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 this is a health issue. Go talk to the health funders. And we talk to the health funders, and they say, oh, you know, we can only give money to build clinics or provide medicine. And so that sort of leaves us in this fuzzy gray area where it's difficult to find funding for these kinds of issues. And, of course, you know, if we go to corporate foundations, you know, they always have this paranoia, well, if they, you know, help to fund the remediation work, are people going to think that they're implicit in and have been implicated in causing the pollution problem? And so it's a little tricky. Although we do have support from certain places, actually the multilateral development community, their grant facilities have been very supportive, and all of the in-kind donations that we get in time and expertise from our technical advisory board has been invaluable.
That's interesting what you say, that there are certain kinds of environmental issues, and I can see the point here that there's been so much press on climate change, so much discussion about that, that that might be the place simply because it's in the news more that people would pay more attention to it rather than the kinds of programs extremely valuable that you're dealing with.
Yeah, it can be frustrating at times, but we're just trying to make the most of what we have. I mean, we don't really have very many staff members. Our overhead is virtually non-existent. There's only about two of us in New York, and then obviously our project partners on the ground in all the countries we work with.
Our number is 800-486-8655, 227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. And we go to Jeff from Green Bay next. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning. I'm calling with a question. I understand they're using spent uranium in the warheads that they're launching into Iraq in the civilian areas. And my question is, are you aware of it, and how long do you believe that uranium will affect those children there? And I thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for the call.
Well, Iraq is not really an area that we've been able to get that much information or research on, but there's certainly going to be, I'm sure, some devastating environmental impacts from what's going on over there. And as soon as we are able to make an assessment, it will definitely be on our radar.
And thanks very much for the call. Is that true of other war-torn areas? Are the effects of war long-lasting in terms of pollution, Meredith?
Yes, well, especially in zones where there's been a lot of chemical warfare, there are communities that are still experiencing incredible amounts of, you know, birth defects and cancers. You know, like if you look at communities that were affected by Agent Orange and sarin gas from Vietnam, you know, all over that region. And so there's definitely some long-lasting effects.
Right. The other thing that we can't stress enough are the number of people who are dying as a result of this kind of pollution. You cite statistics from the World Health Organization and the World Bank estimating that 20% of deaths in the developing world are directly attributed to environmental factors from pollution. That's incredible, isn't it?
It's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing. But I also want to say that there's a greater development issue here, which is that if people are sick, that is going to be the greatest thing that will impede their economic development. So you can spend money on schools and you can have these great economic incentives to jumpstart economies, but if the people are too sick to work,
mm-hmm.
or if their brain capacity is too diminished to develop skills to work, that's more dollars that are wasted. And so, you know, we are very supportive of any effort to make people healthy in the developing world, even issues that we don't focus on, such as eradicating malaria and, of course, AIDS. So basically the goal of what we're trying to do is make people healthy enough so that all these other development issues that we spend billions of dollars on every year can actually have the most impact.
Dick is next from Waukesha. Hi, Dick.
Oh, I didn't expect to get on so soon. You may have touched on this a little bit, but I understand that you have your area that you have to concentrate on because you're underfunded. But when you're in China, for example, is there some way that I anticipate that they're saying, well, you know, why are you picking on us? Other people in the world are doing that, particularly the United States. Is there a gentle way that you can say, well, why don't you challenge the United States? We'll do it if you'll do it. And will that work, or is that naive?
Well, I mean, I think it's actually a really great point. And from our perspective, basically, we're just here to help. There's been an incredible amount of dialogue and politicization of this issue in regards to China. And basically, because we are open to working with any and all partners that we possibly can to fix these issues, you know, we prefer to sort of grease the wheels in any way possible to get the job done.
That would be a way to grease the wheels.
Mm-hmm.
Challenge them to challenge us.
Yeah.
Well, if we are
one day in a position to do that,
that might be
good advice.
You can subtly drop a hint.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to get picked on. Why are you picking on us? They're going to challenge you. And that's, you can explain that just as they have to us, that if you had $100 billion, you'd be tackling all the problems, but you don't. So why don't you go to work on some and challenge the other countries that are polluting? And
mm-hmm.
if we get them working together, well, okay, I'll do it if you'll do it.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's definitely a huge responsibility on the part of the industrialized nations, especially in the United States and Western Europe, not only because we buy a lot of the things that are manufactured in these places that are causing the pollution problems, but also because we have the technology and the capacity. We know the technology that we need to prevent this pollution from happening. We have an incredible amount of skill at dealing with these problems.
But are we doing it?
Implementing the right pollution controls. Well, that's just the problem.
Are we cleaning up the coal that we burn all over the country?
The exchange of information from here over there has not been as comprehensive as it really needs to be.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Dick, very much for the call. The figures that we cited earlier from the World Health Organization and the World Bank, are they involved with helping to identify and certainly helping to fund some of your efforts? It seems as though that would be illogical.
Mm-hmm. Well, we haven't, I don't think, in our short time actually worked with the World Health Organization before, but we have partnered with the World Bank on a couple of projects, and their grant facilities have actually helped us in a few areas, specifically in regards to small-scale gold mining and mercury pollution that results from that. And like I said before, we're open to anyone who is willing to work with us.
Mm-hmm. So, once again, if somebody would like to become involved in the nominating process or in the help you out process, what should they do, Meredith?
Well, if you know of a polluted site, you can email us at nominations@blacksmithinstitute.org. You can also get to us through info@blacksmithinstitute.org. All these email addresses are on our website. Or you can feel free to call our offices or write us a letter. All the information to get in touch with us is on the website, including a form to help you assess whether or not your community is faced with pollution that is impacting people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Meredith, very much for being with us.
Sure. Thank you.
And the website for you to go to is pretty easy. It's Blacksmith Institute. That's all together, BlacksmithInstitute.org, BlacksmithInstitute.org, to get more information on the top 10 list and to nominate areas and also to look at their impressive efforts in at cleanup in various places throughout the world. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and to Rhonda as well for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. And thanks to Meredith for joining us. Works with programs with Blacksmith and is in charge of what's going on in terms of Africa cleanups for Blacksmith Institute. I'm Kathleen Dunn. We'll be with you again tomorrow at 9. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.